There is one more, NRC, one of the other defendants here.
Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, again, David Harris representing the appellants BP and NRC. We ask that this court reverse the district court's remand order because the district court abused her discretion in failing to exercise her supplemental jurisdiction pursuant to 28 U.S.C. 1367. As I'm sure this court is aware, this was a complex and is a complex commercial dispute that was remanded 2 days before trial was scheduled to commence. The events preceding the trial were extensive and exhaustive. There was 15 months of expedited procedure before the trial court or the district court, 35 hearings, 70 motions, 45 orders, 400 docket entries, and 21 volumes of court files.
A lawyer's dream.
It was a robust case, Your Honor, and well recognized for that within our respective offices.
The last case was not, where the adverse party just didn't bother to show.
One would argue which was the better lawyer dream, this one or that one. But, Your Honors, the test is well known in this circuit that, as a general rule, if the grounds for federal jurisdiction disappear prior to trial, the matter is presumed to go back to state court. But if it's during trial, it is presumed to stay in federal court. That presumption can be rebutted by facts and circumstances, and this court has a well-articulated four-part test. I don't need to repeat all of the nuances concerning those because I think there's really three essential elements going to what the core issue is, which is essentially what was the correct result in order to promote the efficient adjudication of this dispute. There are three elements of that I just want to mention to the court.
Actually, that statement of the issue sort of presumes that we're reviewing this de novo, which, of course, we're not. You've got a presumption against you, and you've got a standard of review against you.
Well, in that case, there have been, in the consideration of both the presumption and the four factors, this court has reversed as an abuse of discretion remand orders, and the most recent of it, which was on August 12th of 2011 by a panel of this court, finding that. And in the consideration of that, the key issue that was focused upon by the court is that, as articulated by this court's decision in Whitley or a little earlier this year, is that once a court has invested the time and energy to resolve a legal claim, it would be foolish to set the decision aside and remand it so that a different court could cover the same ground. And looking at basically what is the core consideration here, what is the most efficient, and what did the court abuse her discretion in making that determination, we point out a couple of facts. One, we were 2 days from trial. If we had gone to trial, this case would have been over at the end of January or the beginning of February this year. As matters now stand, the trial is set in Cook County on November 7th, 2011, 10 months later. It's hard to argue that there would have been, that sending it to state court was a more efficient administration of justice to bring this dispute between the parties to an end. Secondly, the presumption that Your Honor mentioned.
And on what use the district judge could make of this time? The question involved in these remands is not simply what's efficient for these litigants, but also what's efficient for the judicial system as a whole. And the district judge, instead of spending a couple of weeks trying a state law claim, could put that to use with other litigants. Shouldn't we be thinking about them too?
You may certainly think about the other litigants, but we may also think about what would happen to the state court judge, who is then given a case that has proceeded to the verge of trial, and I believe this court has commented that it's not appropriate just necessarily to roll the ball down the court, or in this case, down the street.
Not much I understand, but U.S. District Court's got 20-some-odd judges. The Circuit Court of Cook County has got more than 400, and district judges doubtless take account of that fact.
There's no question. And so the issue then isn't, but I have yet to see a case decided by this circuit saying that because the district judge could have spent his or her time on another case, that insulates the exercise of discretion from any review or any challenge by the litigating parties. And in fact, this court, its articulation of the presumption has made it pretty clear that the presumption is just a common sense rule of thumb that's employed by the court to make a determination about where there was a fair allocation of judicial resources. This court said in Groff, which is a case cited by both sides.
Yeah, well, I understand that. You've got going against you not only the fact the district court had other uses of her time, but she also said, although the parties have filed lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of documents, they pass through my memory like it were a sieve, right? I don't know this case from beans.
That actually is not the case.
She didn't use the word sieve.
That's what she meant. No, what the court was focusing on was how much time she had spent evaluating the one federal claim that remained in the case, which was a Robinson-Patman claim. But what the court did not address, and which we think is another set of unique circumstances here, is how she left the record at the point that she was going to remand. Remember, this was principally going to be a judge-tried case. There was only one gas station on certain limited counts that had a right to a jury. So she was going to be the trier of fact. There was no magistrate involved. She handled the entire case from beginning to end. And the handling of that case informed how the trial was going to be conducted. She made a partial ruling on a sanction issue to preclude certain evidence that could be admitted by the plaintiff Desai. The plaintiffs asked hypothetical questions at the remand hearing about, well, can we ask this question and can we ask this question? All of that would be sorted out at trial and informed by the court presiding over all of the events, which were principally a violation of electronic discovery rules, that would have applied. The state court judge had none of that history, has none of that history, and can only glean it by retreading the ground that the federal court judge tread. Secondly, the federal court judge deferred to the state court judge a consideration of whether monetary sanctions should be awarded against both of the plaintiffs for their discovery violations.
Well, that's a distinct problem. We've got some federal aspects of this case that seem to be live. But would you be really happy if we sent this back to the district court with directions to quantify the sanction and then send it to state court?
Well, we asked her to do that, and she didn't do it. And there was,
of course, if we did that, it would take even longer to get resolved. First, it would go back to the district court, and then it would go to the state court.
I would agree that it would not be good to piecemeal the case any more than it's been piecemealed. But that's not the only issue. The expert Daubert motion was punted to the state court, and the UCC 2305 summary judgment, which was punted to the state court for resolution as a part of the overall record. In other words, the court had expressed that she had issued tentative rulings on summary judgments, but was going to revisit them during the trial after she had been informed by what she herself characterized as a voluminous and fulsome record that she had toiled with well enough that she didn't need pretrial briefs to understand it. There is no way that we are going to be in a position before a state court judge with the benefit of 15 months of knowledge and the activity evidenced by the lengthy involvement by the trial court in the adjudication of all of these issues. And if one was trying to make a determination of whether or not it would be an appropriate and efficient disposition of the case at the point of remand, then one could not have answered anything other than the most efficient and fair resolution of this case would have been to proceed in January and bring it to end rather than still arguing about it here 10 months later. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court?
Schultz.
Jane Schultz for the RWJ plaintiffs. The test is, as we all agree, very straightforward. The case goes back to state court. If there's the federal claims drop out prior to remand, there are three exceptions. One of them is, with all due respect to counsel, the Taflinger case, which this court decided recently, is inapplicable here. That's the situation where it's clear how the state claims ought to be decided. And when it's clear how the state claims ought to be decided, there's no reason to send them back.
If I understand Mr. Harris, he says that with respect to one UCC claim, it is clear in light of the plaintiff's concession on the Robinson-Patman claim, then it's clear how that UCC claim will be decided.
No, we flatly disagree with that.
I understand you disagree with him,
okay.
But it is one of Mr. Harris's arguments.
Okay.
That there is a claim that it's clear that it has to be how it has to be decided.
Okay.
Now, I will welcome listening to your disagreement, but Mr. Harris is making such an argument.
All right. So do you have a question about that, Your Honor? Because in our view, that's precisely why the case should go back to the state court, because what Judge Pallmeyer did in looking at that very claim is decide that that is a claim on which there is no clear state law, and rather than, as perhaps she could have, resolving that claim herself and then sending it back, we think she actually did exactly the right thing by refusing to decide that claim and sending it back to the state court for the state court to decide, as it's scheduled to do tomorrow, just by pure coincidence, to rule on the summary judgment motion on that particular claim. So in our view, that's exactly what Judge Pallmeyer should have done. At the time the federal claims dropped out, in our view, she acted, well, first thing is clear, she exercised her discretion. She raised the issue, and she listened to Mr. Harris explain why the case ought to stay in federal court. Then she stopped. She said she wanted to sleep on it, and she went home and slept on it and came back the next morning, listened to Mr. Harris again.
She could have saved time if she slept on it on the bench.
Well, Judge Pallmeyer's too diligent for something like that. But in any event, she thought about it, and then she did something that we think was appropriate under the circumstances. She thought about what were the open issues in the case, which issues did it make sense for her to address before she sent it back to the state court, and which issues were properly in front of the state court.
Well, that actually leads to a different concern, which is that the district judge had found that there was a violation of discovery rules and said that sanctions were in order and hadn't quantified them.
Yes.
How can that be an appropriate issue to send to a state court?
Well, I guess there would be a couple of answers to that. First of all, it really is a tail wagging the dog kind of a situation in trying to decide discovery sanctions. Okay.
It is entirely possible for the district judge to have resolved all the federal issues and then sent it to state court. And maybe it's something we should say. This is not a question, does the whole case have to resolve, stay in federal court forever until all the federal loose ends have been tied up?
Mm-hmm.
But there is a question whether it is an abuse of discretion for a federal judge to tell a state court that the state court has to quantify the sanction for something that's already been imposed by a federal judge for a violation of federal rules while the case was in federal court. That doesn't sound like something that ought to be booted to a state court.
The reason that we think she did that, quite frankly, is that the proper amount of the sanctions depended on how the evidence came in trial. It was very heavily related to what evidence was going to come in at trial, and that only a trial judge, after hearing what was going to come in and what was going to be kept out, would be in a position to fully assess what the amount of the sanctions would be.
And, did you ever say that?
In so many words.
I find an explanation for why the district judge sent this to state court with a federal issue still open on the docket and couldn't find any.
That's been our assumption of her thinking on that. And can I point to something in the record where she said precisely that? No, I can't. But that is our belief.
Well, I think our belief and statements actually made by the district court are in separate categories.
Well, that certainly is true, Your Honor. In our view, their position essentially makes two points, which is, first of all, that the rule should be changed a little bit. The rule is basically send it back if the federal claims drop out prior to trial starting. They want to say before trial gets close, or once we get close to trial. That raises, in our view, two questions. Number one, does this court have the power to do that? Gibbs probably...
Before we get too far into this, let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
About what is permissible. Do you think it would be permissible for us to direct the district judge to finish the discovery sanctions business while leaving the rest of the case in state court? That is it possible for a case to be in two courts at once? Or would the district court have to yank the whole thing out of state court in order to resolve the discovery question?
Well, New York, I guess, as we know, allows a case to be in the trial court and the appellate court at the same time. I can't tell the court that I'm aware of a similar case where it would be pending in state court and federal court at the same time. I suppose, in theory, if that's the key to what the court thinks has to happen, then presumably the case does have to come back with a direction to her to resolve the sanctions issue. Now, I guess
I was just asking whether there was law on this. One section of 1367 says that if there's a discrete issue, even without remanding the whole case, a federal judge can send that to state court. I'm just thinking out loud, and that might imply that it is entirely permissible to have the case split in two and be in both courts at once.
Certainly, we would have no objection to that if that's the way this court thinks that is necessary to handle it. Now, in our view, I guess I should say there's no reason that a state court judge can't apply, decide sanctions. State court judges apply federal law all the time. Federal court judges apply state law all the time. State court judges in Illinois apply Montana law all the time. So to say that a state court judge can't apply a federal court's ruling on discovery sanctions, we think that there's no reason for that. In our view, Judge Pallmeyer properly exercised her discretion. She thought very carefully about what she knew about the case, what she had done with the case, whether or not, in her view, it made sense for her to continue to preside over it or to send it back to a state court judge. And she concluded, in our view, absolutely correctly, that it made more sense for the judicial system as a whole, in light of the state of her knowledge and her involvement in the case, to send it back to state court. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Ewan.
May it please the court, my name is Dave Ewan. I represent the Desai plaintiffs, and I'm going to address the discovery sanctions issue as it relates to claims that could be barred against the Desai plaintiffs. Defendants argue that the district court's ruling on their motion for discovery sanctions necessitates that the case remain in federal court. However, there is nothing novel or unique to federal court about her ruling that would amount to an exception to the presumption that the case should be remanded. The opinion did not cite any federal case law, nor did it even refer to the federal rules of civil procedure. The ruling simply stated that if there were any documents that were in existence at one time that were later destroyed, then the plaintiffs would be barred from pursuing any claims that could be supported or contested by those documents. After reviewing the evidence presented by the defendants, the district court did not find that there were actually any documents that were destroyed. If there were actually had been documents that were destroyed, certainly she would have entered a bar order, but she did not. Essentially, all the district court did was reinforce to the parties that they had a duty to preserve evidence and not to destroy documents. Certainly, that duty exists at the state court level as well as a court of any jurisdiction. Defendants have the burden of proving that there were documents that were actually destroyed in order to even trigger the district court's order. Thus, the trial court, whether it be a state or federal court, would have to hear evidence on this issue. Nothing that the district court had previously reviewed will matter, because based on the evidence, she did not find that there were any specific documents that were destroyed. There's no reason why a federal court needs to make this decision. A state court is certainly just as capable of ruling on discovery issues and whether sanctions are warranted as a state court and a federal court would be. For the defendants to suggest otherwise is an insult to the state court. State courts deal with sanctions motions all the time, certainly maybe even more so than federal courts do, and there's nothing supports that the district court abuse its discretion in remanding the case to state court, and that decision should be upheld. Thank you.
Is it your intention to file an amended complaint in the state court proceedings?
We actually did file a Sixth Amendment complaint in the state court proceedings several months after the court remanded the case. That motion for leave was denied. That filing was not before Judge Pallmeyer when she made her decision to remand. So
leave to amend has been denied?
Leave to amend was denied,
yes. Did you sought leave to amend to add a federal claim?
We did sought leave to amend a federal claim, Your Honor. We were not the attorneys at the time.
Okay. But that's been resolved against the addition of the federal claim.
Yeah, that request was denied.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Harris?
Just very briefly, Your Honor.
I think we just witnessed why we're so concerned about the fact that we've had a remand to state court is because at least the Desai plaintiffs want to re-argue a motion that was fully briefed and decided by Judge Pallmeyer under the applicable federal rules.
Of course, they could try to re-argue that if the case were in federal court.
They could
try to re-argue. Subject to the doctrine of law of the case, but that's true if it goes to state court.
Except that Judge Pallmeyer would have been informed as to the 12 hearings and 3 motions that have been previously filed concerning the adherence of the plaintiffs to electronic discovery matters. There's another federal issue which deals with the role of the expert witnesses, and Your Honor identified the 2305 interconnection with the discriminatory pricing claims that were in federal court.
There's nothing that prevents your bringing the litigation history to the attention of the state judge, I take it.
He was delighted to see the 5 boxes that he had to review just for the 2305 claim, as well as others. The only thing I wanted to draw your attention
was the word delighted in quotation marks or not?
We didn't actually put the transcript statement about his reaction to some of these events. Your Honor, you asked the question about 1367 and parsing off an issue. I think that is parsing off claims. I'm not sure that it would just be an issue. And there is one decision we found talking about that matter. It is the Bell South case, Bryan versus Bell South. I apologize, we did not send it in as supplemental authority because I didn't anticipate that this question would be asked, but it can be found at 492 Fed Third 231 and says you can't have simultaneous action pending in federal court and state court at the same time. There's a vigorous dissent in the case as well, and I would just commend it to Your Honor's review should you be interested in pursuing that issue. Again, at the end of the day, we would be done with this case. We might have been here anyway, but it would have been on a different matter and for different issues. Nevertheless, we would request that the court reverse the remand order. Thank you.
From the history of this case, it looks like no matter who wins, no matter at what stage, there will be a further appeal.
There will be a further appeal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.